Welcome to Rethinking Trade with Lori Wallach, a podcast that unpacks international trade and how it affects you without putting you to sleep.
Welcome to Rethinking Trade with Lori Wallach. Today's episode is about what actually happened after more than 2 years of the pandemic and 15 million dead, with the global campaign to get the World Trade Organization's intellectual property barriers out of the way as they have blocked access to vaccines and treatments and tests for billions of people around the world. Let me cut to the chase before introducing our guests. The WTO's first big high-level meeting in years recently ended, and the intellectual property barriers that have blocked billions of people's timely access to life-saving COVID-19 medicines were not waived. Instead of a waiver supported by more than 100 countries, civil society across the world, academics, former heads of state, even the Pope, a rump text written by the WTO staff was railroaded through. That document combines the European and Swiss and UK fealty to Big Pharma in not waiving any intellectual property barriers, and US insistence that any WTO outcome only cover vaccines, not the COVID-19 treatments at the heart of the US test and treat strategy. This outrageous outcome may not have been clear in the mainstream coverage. So today we're very fortunate to have two folks who are in the middle of the entire global effort, from literally before South Africa and India first proposed a waiver of these WTO intellectual property monopolies for Big Pharma way back in October of 2020. Sangeeta Shashikant is the legal and policy advisor for Third World Network, a research and advocacy organization. Sangeeta was at the front lines of the WTO ministerial in Geneva during the ministerial, helping developing countries with analysis and technical support through the entire process, awake for days straight, as the ministerial was repeatedly extended. Fatima Hassan is a South African human rights lawyer, HIV, AIDS, and social justice activist. She is the founder and the director of Health Justice Initiative in Cape Town, South Africa. She's been a national leader in South Africa, pushing the government to fight for the full waiver it proposed, and along with Sangeeta, has been a leader in this amazing international effort to get the WTO to simply get the hell out of the way. So let's start with what started in sum. After almost 2 years of the pandemic and all this effort, let me start, Fatima. What the heck happened? What was the outcome?
Yeah. Good question, which is what we're all wondering. I mean, the only logical conclusion is that we've been subjected to the most bizarre form of gaslighting and bullying, because where we are right now is that we're at that situation that we were all worried about in 2020 already, that the WTO would not be a responsive mechanism to the needs of people in the global south, and that in fact it would be a barrier and not an enabler of equity. And unfortunately, you know, our worst predictions have basically come to materialize, and this is where we're at now. So it's a bit absurd, right, Lori, that for 20 months the negotiations were happening, 20 months in the middle of a pandemic, and this is the outcome, like a really, really weak deal. It doesn't really offer much.
And what does it mean for the world as COVID continues, and for that matter, for the next inevitable pandemic, this decision of June 17th from the 12th Ministerial Conference, MC12 of the WTO? What does it mean practically, Sangeeta, as we go forward?
So practically, the decision falls short of what is needed to address the COVID-19 challenges. It does not waive the relevant TRIPS obligations or lift the IP monopolies. And what this effectively means is we will continue to witness inequitable access with respect to COVID-19 And we will see a repeat of the scarcities and inequity in the next health emergency. We already see this in the context of treatments for COVID-19, whereby most of WHO-recommended therapeutics are simply unavailable or unaffordable in many developing countries. I think it's a reality that even where the voluntary licenses exist, they exclude supply to many developing countries, and they contain anti-competitive provisions as well. And for most of this year, even in the context of voluntary licenses and where they exist, scarcity is expected to remain. And we look at the disparity in testing. It's simply unacceptable. For every 1 million people, there are 3 million tests in developed countries. And developed countries represent only 16% of the world population. Less than 500,000 tests in developing countries that represent 70% of the world population. And 60,000 tests in least developed countries that represent 14% of the world population. The disparity in testing is massive. And in May of this year, WHO had alerted the world that in the absence of testing, we are essentially blind to how the virus is mutating and we do not know what's coming next. So this disparity in access is going to hurt all of us because we are dealing with a mutating virus, and we are unable to provide the tools needed for governments to respond to the COVID-19 pandemic, but also to future pandemic. So, Laurie, if you look at what was originally asked, it was a comprehensive waiver covering TRIPS obligations for patents, copyright, trade secrets, and industrial designs. It was a waiver calling of 35 articles of the TRIPS agreement.
TRIPS is the Trade-Related Intellectual Property Agreement in the WTO. That's where all these IP monopolies are.
And the rationale was that it's a public health emergency. Manufacturers need full freedom to operate. There should not be any barriers in their way. And this is the way to diversify production and expand supply options. What was agreed in the end was really recognizing the right to use compulsory license flexibility. This is a flexibility we already have under Article 31 of TRIPS. Compulsory license is a license granted by a government to third parties to exploit the patent without the consent of the patent holder. Now, normally, the use of compulsory license is subject to a condition that if you use compulsory license, it has to be predominantly to supply the domestic market. Exports are allowed, but you cannot export all or most of the production. Now, a mechanism was agreed in 2003. This mechanism waived this condition. The problem with that mechanism was it came with a lot of different conditions. The decision that was agreed on 17th June essentially waives that, although there are still problematic elements and conditions in that decision. So essentially, what we have is really a waiver of one condition attached to the use of compulsory license. It is inadequate to deal with a public health emergency. What was proposed in October 2020 and globally supported was a comprehensive waiver covering key TRIPS obligations across various categories of intellectual property, covering all the different health products. What we have is really one small waiver attached to the use of an existing TRIPS flexibility. And this is further subjected to conditions. It is only for 5 years and it's limited to vaccines.
The compulsory license is something the government has to grant. And the difference was the waiver was actually going to make it easier than having to go through the compulsory licensing. As Sangeeta just said, compulsory licensing is something that's already allowed under the WTO and it hasn't proved sufficient in all these years of pandemic for countries to get the meds that people need. So to cut to the chase, what just happened was a waiver on the limitation on exporting of medicines made under compulsory license, but only covering vaccines, which you ask me, even before these conditions, Sangeeta is going to explain, is really cynical. Because, ladies, am I getting this wrong? But it sounds like with no IP waiver, you can't make more vaccines. And so you have a right to export stuff you can't make. And if it doesn't cover treatments, which are perhaps easier to make under compulsory licensing, is it really going to make a difference even before you get to these conditions for more vaccines being made and available around the world?
And Sangeeta's right. I mean, when she talks about the limitations of the deal, the most disheartening and absurd and enraging part of this deal is that treatment and diagnostics are not included.
I want to say this very clearly to the people in the United States who are listening to this. You think you have COVID, you go to a local pharmacy, you get tested easy as pie. And if you're positive, you get immediately a prescription for this drug, Paxlovid. Paxlovid helps make sure, if you're vaccinated or not, that you're much less likely to die from COVID. It also makes you much less ill. It means you can go back to work sooner. That medicine is literally not allowed to be made or sold in half of the world. Because Pfizer, the corporation that has the monopoly on it, has decided it will make it available for the really, really poor countries, and it will sell it in the really, really rich countries. But unless the countries in the middle, the South Africas, for instance, most of Latin America, unless they're willing to pay an arm and a leg, no, they just can't have it.
I mean, worse is that where there are attempts to get a compulsory license, for example, on Paxlovid, which is, you know, a license against Pfizer in the Dominican Republic, that is being resisted. A compulsory license on a vaccine in relation to Johnson & Johnson in Canada is being resisted and blocked. So the EU's kind of response that, you know, it's just a matter of using the existing flexibilities and issue a compulsory license, even that has been shown to not be something that is easy and automatic, which is why, you know, in the beginning I said this is absurd and perverse, because what they actually said to us with a straight face when they announced this deal was that here's your solution, but the solution is actually something that is not really usable or workable.
Sangeeta, jump back in with the conditions.
So US made two demands. One was that any decision should be limited to vaccines. So the US administration did not deliver on its promise of an IP waiver for vaccines. Although, as you mentioned, therapeutics and diagnostics are critical tools for controlling COVID-19, but they have been excluded. And such a decision would have been especially useful for therapeutics and diagnostics. The second condition, again, demanded by the US is the application of eligibility criteria. One is that it limits producers, the countries that can use the decision, to developing countries only. And it's rather absurd because the objective of the decision is production and supply of vaccines. But the eligibility criteria encourages developing countries that can produce and supply to not use the decision. The second condition is an anti-diversion measure, another absurd condition in the context of a public health emergency. It prevents re-exports. So if South Africa exports to Botswana, Botswana cannot re-export to Kenya. There is no basis for such a condition in a decision that is about ensuring supply to all countries that are in needs. But because the developing countries pushed against this measure, they have added a footnote which allows for humanitarian and not-for-profit. But that exception is very, very limited. And then there are general obligations to notify, which again increases the burden on developing countries.
Fatima, in your view, what the heck happened at the WTO ministerial that we ended up with that outcome?
So I think what happened was that we basically inherited a situation that has been, you know, in the play for a very long time, where richer countries get to exercise their power and their muscle, leaving developing countries basically at their mercy. And so what we thought was going to happen with COVID was that wouldn't be the norm, that the status quo of how negotiations normally take place at the WTO would not basically negatively influence this particular process, which is why, you know, for 20 months, like you said in the introduction, there's been unprecedented support from labor because we were in the middle of a global pandemic. We were offered solidarity. We were told we're all in this together. If you have infections in one part of the world, you're likely to have variants then occurring in other parts of the world. So the interconnectedness was so evident and obvious in the epidemiology of COVID that nobody thought that it would take 20 months for countries to negotiate a simple solution, or what should have been a simple solution, and turned it into this complex set of negotiations and a really bad deal. So when you say what happened, I think, is this. We've got the outcome of what I've called warped multilateralism. And what we got in the end was such a weak deal that it's difficult to see how this is going to benefit people in 2022. What happened was that for 20 months, while we had wave after wave of infection and illness, and people needed treatment and diagnostics, and they needed access to vaccines, they didn't get it in the global south because IP monopolies were considered to be more important than human life. So I think what we are seeing from where we are is a world that does not prioritize public health and does not prioritize the treatment of conditions such as COVID with vaccine treatment and diagnostics as public goods. So there is a preference for commodification, and I think the WTO deal has just cemented that preference by richer countries. But the irony of the situation that we're in is to get out of this pandemic, we're looking to a trade body that preferences economic power, and a trade body that doesn't preference, I think, in my view, the livelihoods of millions of people around the world. And so when you ask the question about what does this mean for the mRNA hub that is based in South Africa, given that Moderna has been granted very wide patents, that it sought quite early on in this pandemic, on a technology that we believe has been funded by public funding and also been supported through the generation of public scientists, none of us are any the wiser. Our government doesn't want to tell us what its IP strategy is in relation to the hub. The medicines patent pool and the WHO are being cagey about what this deal actually means for how the hub can actually benefit research and knowledge into not just COVID-19 vaccines, but also TB and malaria. So I think there's a lot of unanswered questions. There is a reluctance to share information in a timely way. I think people also feel, given that this deal has basically been secured on these terms, that there's almost a sense that they don't have to be accountable to anyone because the precedent has been set for a way in which you bully global South countries into submission.
How did people, Fatima, in South Africa react to the middle of June announcement on this non-deal deal that won't really make a difference to access to medicines?
I think the worst thing is that it was announced within hours of the commemoration of June 16 in South Africa, which, as you'll remember, was a very significant day for us and a very significant, horrendous day in South Africa's history as in the anti-apartheid struggle. It was the day of what's called the Soweto riots. And so for us, I think there was an absolute disbelief that our government, which had fought so bravely and so boldly alongside the government of India for about 18 months, for the last 2 months it became quite silent, but for the better part of the last year and a half, fought, you know, for a comprehensive, genuine TRIPS waiver, all elements of IP, all medical technologies for the duration of this particular COVID pandemic. But what we then found out was that our government was silent in the last 2 months, didn't propose any textual amendments, and agreed to this weak deal, and then tried to portray it as something that was quite significant and important. Despite the bullying, South Africa should have stood up, and it didn't when it mattered the most. And so What you then had was groups in South Africa basically calling it out and saying, one, that this is a weak deal and a really bad deal. It's a slap in the face for countries in the global south, including for poor people in South Africa. And that it's actually not what is being portrayed by the WTO, DG, and the EU and the US governments as something that should be celebrated. And for us, you know, it actually says that the WTO is not fit for purpose, whereas the politicians were portraying this as some great victory on the part of the WTO, that it managed to get a deal, very weak one at that, 2 days after the WTO ministerial conference was extended as part of some other WTO packages. And, you know, the attempt by the WTO to portray itself as really relevant and really useful for multilateralism. What it said to us was quite the opposite, that this multilateralism is only benefiting, you know, a select few. And by a select few, I mean really rich and powerful countries.
Sangeeta, along those lines, I saw how the Indian trade minister in the WTO ministerial literally 36 hours before agreeing to this sham non-waiver, was calling out the very text he later agreed to as useless and making no difference and wouldn't create a single additional vaccine, and more or less sounded a lot like Fatima in what her characterization of both the political dynamic and the text was. And I'm curious if you have a view about this sudden shift where not only in South Africa and India, but in a variety of countries, politicians, the WTO's director general, which is what the DG is, WTO's director general, are suddenly saying this was a great victory. I guess if you're the director general, the fact the whole thing didn't blow up with no outcome is probably what she thinks is a victory. But they're calling the actual TRIPS outcome a victory, while health experts around the world are unanimous that it was a scandalous outcome and it won't improve the situation, even in the midst of this once-in-a-generation crisis. So I'm wondering, Sangeeta, if you have a view about what happened there, why the shift, and then why, what's going on that a lot of politicians are trying to paper over a bad outcome. Sangeeta?
So the original waiver proposal by India and South Africa enjoyed massive global support. And I think what we saw at the end of the, on 17 June, and as all the politicians had headed back home, basically they were trying to appease their constituency. But the devil is in the details. I followed the negotiations before the MC12. There were very intense negotiations 2-3 weeks before the MC12. The push was not to improve the text. The discussion was not about what works for public health, but more in relation to how can we best support, you know, and protect the interests of big pharma. And so what we saw in this entire process, especially the developed countries, mostly interested in ensuring that big pharma is able to maintain the intellectual property monopolies and to maximize their profits. The issues of public health, access to medicines, were really not given the due considerations throughout these negotiations. And I think what we saw at the end was really politicians trying to appeal to their constituency that, you know, this is an outcome out of a very long-term process. But, you know, as I said, the devil is in the details, and we read it, it's a very weak outcome, a very limited waiver of one condition. And it does not do justice to the immense advocacy and global support that was there, that is there and remains there for the original TRIPS waiver proposal of India and South Africa.
So the situation we're in is outrageous, it's scandalous, it's infuriating. And so many people fought for so long, and it was an amazing effort that has made the whole world much more aware of these outrages, of this inequality, of the role of the WTO helping pharmaceutical companies keep people from getting access to meds. So, my colleagues, what should people who are now alerted, who care, who are aware, what should they all do next? What are the next steps?
So let me go first, because I think there's some political and structural issues that we need to, you know, be aware of and I think address. Because what this deal has reinforced once again, like in the HIV/AIDS crisis, that knowledge hoarding is okay. And what it's done and it's doing is deferring knowledge sharing. So when we talk about commodification and about, you know, treating life-saving knowledge as a public good, I think that that is the immediate next step, is how do we deal with the systemic issues to get to the point of not just having awareness that knowledge hoarding basically costs lives, but actually addressing that hoarding.
And what can anyone do to change that? What can activists do?
There's a long list of things we need to do, but I think the first and most pressing and most immediate thing is that we've got to build a global campaign to ensure that the WTO is never, ever again going to be the body that has to provide the solution to getting out of the pandemic. But we cannot have a trade body determining issues of equity and issues of access to life-saving technologies. It's simply not sustainable. So the very notion that medical technologies should be regarded as something that is patentable and that should be protected by international trade rules, that is what we as activists have to actually address and work on going forward.
Thank you, Fatima. Sangeeta, what do you think activists should be doing? What should happen next? How do we get out of this mess?
I think what the 20 months since the submission of the waiver proposal, but also the whole more than 2 years of COVID-19 pandemic has revealed is the big power, the big pharma wheels over governments, especially in developed countries. And that is even as we see the deaths from COVID-19 have topped more than 15 million globally. And we hear everyone saying no one is safe until everyone is safe. We have seen Big Pharma make billions in profits, billions, you know, unprecedented profits. And yet these governments feel the need to continue operating to serve the interests of Big Pharma. And this is at a time of unprecedented public health emergency, where we have seen governments take measures we have never seen before, national lockdowns for months at end. So there is a big problem, structural problem with the system. There's a regulatory capture. And I think we do need to address this as a priority. Now, beyond this, a few things that need to be done is the ministerial decision talks about extension to diagnostics and therapeutics. We do need to address IP barriers to diagnostics and therapeutics, and ideally with an improved tech. The US should openly encourage the use of TRIPS flexibilities, compulsory license. Historically, the US has harassed, threatened sanctions against countries that have even thought of using compulsory license. You know, the US should openly now support the use of compulsory licenses and encourage countries, developing countries and developed countries, to also use compulsory license. The US should also make clear that TRIPS Plus provisions in free trade agreements that undermine access and all the use of TRIPS flexibilities will not be enforceable, because often you can issue a compulsory license, but the provisions in the free trade agreements prevent the entry of generic alternatives. And finally, what we have learned is business as usual practices cannot deliver access during a public health emergency. If we are dealing with a mutating virus that is infectious, we do need to have a different approach. Right now, there are only a few manufacturers globally that produce the different ingredients and also the vaccines, right? And so we do need to diversify production, and we do need to build resilience for future public health emergencies. Unless we do that, we are nowhere close to doing it. We don't even have the tools to do it, as we can see with the waiver decision. It's not sufficient for us to do that. So we do need to rethink how we are going to approach intellectual property monopolies, and with great intensity, actually, because we do have a huge problem on our hands with respect to access and intellectual property that needs to be addressed.